Hello, everyone. My name is Elijah David, minister of the 12th Hour Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation of Mount Zion at the 12th Hour in the Liberty Hill, Texas. Today is May 13, 2014, or it is if 15, 2018. We will start our first service today with a song entitled The 90 and 9. There were 90 and 9 that safely lay in the shelter of the foe. But one was out on the hills away, far, far from the gates of gold. Away on the mountains wild and fair, away from the care, the shepherd's care. Away from the tender shepherd's care. Yet thou hast here the 90 and 9, are they not enough for thee? But the shepherd made answer, one of mine has wandered away from me. And although the road be rough and steep, I go to the desert to find my sheep. I go to the desert to find my sheep. But none of the ransom ever knew how deep were the waters crawled, nor how dark was the night that the all passed through, where he found his sheep that was lost. For out in the desert he heard his cry, fainting and helpless and ready to die. Fainting and helpless and ready to die. Yah whips these blood drops all the way that mark at the mountains try. They were shed for one who had gone astray, and a shepherd did bring them back. But ere the hands so rent and torn, they pierced through my heart the many a thorn. They are pierced to night by many a thorn. But all through the mountains thunder riven, and up from the rocky steep, there rose a cry to the gate of heaven, rejoice, I found my sheep. And the angels sang around the throne, rejoice, for the Yahshua brings back his own. Rejoice, for the Yahshua brings back his own.
The judgment beginning in 1970 by Verlis W. Johnson. We're reading from a tract that he published in 1973. And we're going to start our study and reading this morning from Daniel chapter 7. And it says that, verse 9, I beheld till the thrones were cast down, meaning that they were set up, and the Ancient of Days did sit, whose garment was white as snow, and the hair of his head like the pure wool. His throne was like the fiery flame, and his wheels as a burning fire. a fiery stream issued and came forth from before him. 1,000,000 ministered unto him, and 10,000 times 10,000 stood before him. The judgment was set, and the books were opened. I beheld then because of the voice of the great words which the horn spake, and I beheld even till the beast was slain, and his body destroyed and given to the burning flame. Okay. So now Daniel saw all this. He saw the judgment set of the dead and the living. Then he beheld until that beast was slain and given to the burning flame. Now, Verla Johnson, with inspiration, brings forth the creation calendar in 1970, and he sets the 11th parabolic hour in motion, so to speak. That's when it's come time for a new hour to begin and one to end. We ended the 10th parabolic hour in 1970, closing out the rod period of 40 years. Ben Roden was the one that closed out the rod period as far as prophecy is relating to that event. And Ben Roden knew it not. He didn't know where he was at in the stream of time. He didn't know what Bible character he was playing. And neither did Verla W. Johnson. Well, actually, Verla Johnson did know the Bible character he was playing. That was Joshua, the son of Nun. And he had that right, I believe. And, nevertheless, Verla Johnson, over the course of time, lost his way, and that's what happens to a prophet when he's given one thing to do, and then he tries to get into other fields, into areas of prophecy that wasn't given to him. P.T. Hollis did the same thing. Ben Roden did the same thing before him. Ellen G. White, the first prophetess for the Adventist Church in 1844 to launch the Little Advent Band, she was faithful from the beginning until the end. She didn't overreach and try to get into anything that wasn't given to her. She wrote things out as she saw them, and her understanding, her understanding was limited as far as the fulfillment of the final prophecies of the end time events, and rightfully so. Yahweh held his hand over all of his prophets: Ellen G. White, V.T. Hollis, Ben Roden, and Brother W. Johnson, his four major prophets that contributed to the spirit of prophecy, the former and the latter reign of truth, and that they were the leaders they were the four total main leaders of the fourth group of laborers that was called at the end of the ninth hour in 1844. Keep in mind that William Miller, identified as the first day Adventist, he fulfilled the three parabolic hours before 1844, and that's from 1833 to 1844, was the seventh, eighth, and ninth hour that the Millerite movement worked in. And so we have Brother Johnson now been appointed to restore the sanctuary and given the tools to do it with, creation calendar. And he did a good job on it. We want to point out that was given the judgment beginning 1970 for the house of Esau, which he was in a typical Esau with the birthright, and his mountain that he presided over was Mount Edom. And Mount Edom represents the mountain that was representing the Adventist Church. And so that was Mount Bashan. Now Brother Johnson is presiding from Mount Gilead. He's appointed to be over Mount Gilead, the third feeding pasture for the Adventists. But nevertheless, he's the angel of the seventh candlestick, meaning he's a prophet appointed unto the Adventist Church from Mount Gilead. And so now we'll start our reading on page one of his tract, The Judgment Beginning 1970. And it says, Seventh-day Adventists and Davidians, did you know that each one of you must pass through the judgment for the living before you can be a part of the Elohim's kingdom, purified church? Now, when he addressed the Adventists and Davidians, he's addressing the 10 tribes of Israel, the Seventh-day Adventists, and he's addressing the two tribes of Israel, the Judah and Benjamin, the Davidian, the shepherd rod. Okay, so now whenever he says Seventh-day Adventists and Davidians, did you know that each one of you must pass through the judgment for the living before you can be a part of Yahweh's kingdom, parentheses, a purified church? Okay, now, after passing through this judgment, you are then qualified to preach this gospel of the kingdom in all the world, loud cry, for a witness unto all nations. You must first have the kingdom church purified before there can be a witness. Now keep in mind that Brutus Johnson is a branch Davidian of Seventh-day Adventist. And he has a third feeding pasture. And he's addressing the two feeding pastures of Bashan, SDA, and Mount Carmel, DSDA. He's addressing those two and telling them that they have to come through the judgment of the living. And he believing that we have entered into the judgment of the living in 1970. So when he said the judgment began in 1970, he meant the judgment of the living. And why he didn't put the judgment of the living there in those words, I do not know, but nevertheless, that's what he meant. He said it off the record, but he didn't put it in print right here on the title of this tract. Nevertheless, it says in 1 Peter 4:17, says, for the time has come that judgment must first begin at the house of Yahweh. And if it first begin at us, what shall the end be of them that obey not the gospel of the Elohim? Now, when you start using this word obey, you're talking about somebody that has to practice the sanctuary system literally at its appointed times for the ordinances of the sanctuary that are in operation. So it says, what is the gospel of the Elohim? Well, actually, the question is that it should have been asked, what is the gospel of the Yahshua? Because gospel is two English words. God spelled it out. And that's spelled, it ends with an ED, and so that means it's a past tense. It's a past tense adverb. God spelled it out. And for I am not ashamed, he said, for I'm not ashamed of the gospel of the Yahshua. There you have it. So when Yahweh spelled it out through the law of Moses, the sanctuary system. For I am not ashamed of the gospel of the Yahshua, for it is the power of Elohim unto salvation unto everyone that believeth, unto the Jew first, spiritual Israel, and also unto the Greek. Now, notice he didn't identify the Greek, but the Greek are also Jews. They're Hebrew Jews. Okay. Well, I say they're Jews. I guess they are. They could be Israelites classed, and the Israelite is not the same thing as a Judah. But now, Israelites are classified as Hebrew, and I guess all the 12 tribes are classified as Hebrew Israelites, but Judah is your lawgiver, classified. For the wrath of the Elohim is revealed from heaven against all unrighteousness and unrighteousness of men who hold the truth in the unrighteousness. Romans 1:16-18. How is this wrath revealed from the heaven? By the messages or through Elohim's chosen messengers, by John in the Revelation of 6:17, Malachi in 3:1-5, and Ezekiel 9, Leviticus 23. This wrath comes upon all who refuse to obey the fallen command in Nahum 1:15. I quote, "Behold upon the mountains the feet of him that bringeth good tidings, that publisheth peace. O Judah, keep thy solemn feast, perform thy vow, for the wicked shall no more pass through thee, he is utterly cut off." Now, why did Nahum just say, "Judah, keep your solemn feast"? Why didn't he say, 12 tribes of Israel, keep your solemn feast"? Because Judah is a separate kingdom from the 10 tribe kingdom that's separated from them, and went north and set up the golden calf with Jeroboam as their first king after Solomon's death. So Yahweh is addressing the righteous kingdom of Judah that was set up down in Jerusalem. The 10 tribes, the unrighteous kingdom, went north and chose to worship golden calves and set up their own temple. There is Samaria. So he says, "Behold upon the mountains." That means all the churches in the world. "The feet of him that bringeth good tidings, that publisheth peace. O Judah, keep thy solemn feast, perform thy vows. For the wicked shall no more pass through thee, he is utterly cut off." So all of those in the house of Israel that won't keep the solemn feast after it has been revealed to Judah what they are and how to keep them, and when that happens, then it's time then to address the rest of the house of Israel, the 10 tribes, that is represented by the Adventist. Seventh-day Adventist headquarters of the General Conference of Seventh-day Adventists. It's time to address them, and it's time to test the Davidian of the Shepherd Rod, that it's time to come up and keep the solemn feast, or they're going to be cut off. That's who the wicked is. Those that refuse advancing truth when it is given to them, then they are classified, they're cut off and classified as wicked. Or heathen. Either one. Then the gospel in 1 Peter 4:17 is a solemn feast in Leviticus 23 for the plan of salvation. For within this law is a time given when the blood is applied, atonement, that is the judgment day. So Nahum 1:15 tells us how the wicked are separated from the righteous. Here the prophetic word of Elohim plainly declares by both Isaiah and Nahum that the prophets that of the prophets that when we see these good tidings published by his him whose feet are seen upon the mountains, and this is now taking place for the first time since the prophets wrote It is to be a sign that the wicked, the violators of the laws of Moses, are soon to be cut off from among Elohim's people. 2 TGR 37:27. So I believe that this prophecy of Nahum 1:15 commanding Judah to keep her solemn feast and perform her vow, I believe indeed that that was given to Brother Johnson in 1970. And I believe indeed that him addressing the Adventists and the Davidian Adventists is right. I believe that he's right. And Brother Johnson realized that this is the beginning of the judgment for the living, for the Adventist Church, and for the house of Esau. Now keep in mind, when the shepherd rod, the Davidians, didn't accept Brother Johnson and move on into the third feeding pasture, then they were coupled together with their mother, the Adventist Church, and they were nothing more than just three angels' messages, people. And they were no longer classified as declaring a Yahweh's judgment. Brother Johnson is the one declaring judgment here. Not the Davidians and not the Adventists. In 1970, they were cut off. And the only hope that they had was coming through the judgment that was beginning there at 1970. Okay, brethren, let's continue. With Brother Johnson's writings here, it says, Ezekiel 9, the judgment of the living, is carried on like a civil court trial, which is in the three divisions, a first investigative, second judicial, third executive. Nahum 1:15 brings to view a judicial judgment, and before one can be judged, cut off, that by which he is judged must first be in the force. Therefore, when these good tidings, the feast of Leviticus 23, were first published, it should have been a sign unto you, brethren, that the judgment was approaching. And then when you were summoned to O Mount Carmel by the Elohim's message, the clarion call for the institution of the Yahshua Supper, April 10, 1971, should have been a sign unto you that the first phase of Ezekiel 9, marking investigative judgment of the living, was in the progress, the antitype of Joshua and the Savior's work at the beginning. The second phase of the Ezekiel 9 judicial in the church is a cutting off, blotting out the sins of the righteous, or blotting out the names of the wicked, violators of the law of Moses, Leviticus 23. So in the Lamb's Book of Life is done at the atonement, Leviticus 23:27-30. The third phase of Ezekiel 9 is with the executive, taking place either after the harvest or sometime in the future, okay, for the judgment of the living brought to view. Here is only dealing with the first of the first fruits of Vanguard, the Davidians, and the first fruits of 144,000 from within the Seventh-day Adventist Church. So he's calling for the Davidians to be the Vanguard, the wave sheaf offering, and he's calling for the Adventists then to follow them to be the 144,000. So you see, nothing changes with the prophets. The Viti had of call and arranged for the Adventists to come and meet with him in 1950 at his place to discuss the 144,000 that were, he believed was to come forth from them. So Rose Johnson here in 1973 is writing this tract and telling them that they should have come forth at 1971 whenever he had the clarion call and the Passover service down at the old headquarters of Mount Carmel, and calling them to come up. And so we have a repeat, you see, of the V.T. Hardifa calling for the same thing in 1950. Here, Brother Johnson, 1970, actually 71, is calling for The same thing beat the other call for in 1950, and that was 144,000. It's time for them to come forth. Okay. So, nothing has changed there. The prophets, their main concern from the time that they were appointed over the candlestick of leadership was that they just got to get the 144,000. That was the theme of the Adventists from 1844 clear up to 1917. They said as soon as we get 144,000 members of the Adventist Church, just as soon that they're going to be disclosed of you, we're going to be disclosed of you. And so they reached that number by 1917. But then whenever the 144,000 actually wasn't disclosed of you through the Adventist Church, then they quit talking about it and turned against that doctrine over a period of time. Let's continue. That part of the investigative judgment of the living, by which is determined who are to have their sins blotted out, and as a result, be given eternal life, is paralleled on earth by the work of the angel with the writer's inkhorn, who is charged to mark seal everyone who sighs and cries for all the abominations in the church and Israel, the church. And the work of the five others who follow on the slave, all who have not the mark or the seal, is paralleled in the heaven by the blotting out of the sinner's name from the book of life. Okay, let's read this all again now. It says, for that part of the investigative judgment of the living, by which is determined who are to have their sins blotted out, and as a result, be given eternal life, is paralleled on the earth by the work of the angel with the writer's inkhorn, which is Yahshua, the one dressed in linen, the one of the six that came down from the north, who is charged to mark or seal everyone who sighs and cries for all the abominations in the Judah and Israel, the ten tribes, the Seventh-day Adventist Church. And the work of the five others who follow on to slay all who have not the mark or seal is paralleled in heaven by the blotting out of the sinner's name from the book of the life. Answer book 2P41. Okay, it says, for the command, gather out of his kingdom all things that offend and them which do iniquity, does not mean to gather his saints from the earth into the heaven. Neither does it mean to destroy the wicked from the earth, for the former are to be gathered not directly into heaven, but first into the barn, the kingdom on the earth, and the latter are not to be destroyed immediately in the time of harvest. But first are to be gathered into the bundles and then destroyed. Track 3, page 67. What is the overall purpose of the Nahum's prophecy? It is to enlighten Elohim's people of the signs of the time, to make them aware that the great and dreadful day of the Yahweh is at hand. That the purification of the church, the judgment in the house of Elohim, 1 Peter 4:17, is soon to take place. Okay, and that the wicked shall not much longer be in their midst, that the redemption of the righteous is at hand, that they must not fail to perform the Elohim given duties. Indeed, Nahum's prophecy clearly identifies Elohim's people of the day under the Assyrian yoke and points to their liberation. Most important of all, though, the prophet Nahum plainly tells that all these things take place in our day and that the fall of Assyria takes place while Elohim's people are turning unto him. So that would have to be in the 12th hour, while the revival and reformation are successfully carried by him who publishes peace. This is This is Antiquity Elijah that publishes this piece, Malachi 4:5. Nahum 1:15. If we, therefore, fail to take hold of the message, and if we fail to reform as it recommends, then it is not possible to survive that day of the Yahweh. 1 TGR 24, page 18-19. What is the day of the Yahweh? It is none other than the judgment of the living who brings this revival reformation. The branch, 1 TGR 8, page 24. How does Yahweh's people turn unto him? By reforming to Nahum 1:15. What causes the Assyrian to fall? By Elohim's people returning unto his feast, Sabbath, his divinely appointed government. Who is holding Elohim's people in captivity today? Not the nation. Then who is keeping Elohim's people from obeying Nahum 1:15? Our only means of surviving the day of the Yahweh. We should therefore understand the sign of the time. Perform our vows unto Elohim, keep our solemn feast, and do everything in Elohim's order, so as to be found righteous, ready to escape the doom of the wicked, and march on unto the kingdom. 2 TGU, number 24. Here you see that the announcement of this long-expected event is to be made by someone's publication. Moreover, he publishes peace and thus announces the restoration of the kingdom. This is the only peace that the world can have. There is to be no other. Those who keep Elohim's solemn feast and perform their vows shall have this peace. None other shall. 2 TGR, number 42, page 41. Is this Assyrian captivity political or religious? Religious, because those who are saved from this captivity are saved by the plan of the salvation, and I'll add, through the blood of the everlasting covenant of the Yahshua, Nahum 1:15. During the judgment of the living. When is this Assyrian period? The period before and during the judgment of the living in the house of Elohim. What brings this period to a close? By Elohim's people fully turning unto him, by the Yahshua taking the reins in his own hands through the judgment. Who is this Assyrian and what brings his downfall? 1 TGR, number 24, page 17, brings to view some facts on this subject. For the people are brought to view. That is in the church, and a nation comparable to the ancient Assyria, under which the church is with the subjection. Notice that the key words, a nation, and the church, a one specific nation. Well, actually, he's using the indefinite article a to describe a specific. You only can describe a specific with the definite article the, not with the a, but he did it with the a here. It says for the one specific church. Now he used the right article there, the definite article. All we have to do now is to determine who the a, the indefinite article identifying a church, and the represents. Okay, so now, if he'd have been really on the ball, he'd have said Mount Gilead, the branch Davidians. That's who we are. He would have said represents just a nation, a church. And maybe he goes on to say that. Let's see. Let us determine first who the church is. Prophets and Kings 7:13-14 brings to view Yahweh's church today, that he has chosen a new husbandman, that they are his covenant Abrahamic keeping people, those who render restore him the fruits of feast in their season, his appointed time, Leviticus 23. In other words, to restore the Levitical system, the divine plan of salvation, that these witnesses are numbered among spiritual Israel, SDA. Under them will be fulfilled all the covenant promises made by the Yahweh unto his ancient people. So apparently, this restoration and these covenant promises didn't fulfill with Gilead sinners, so apparently it is talking about a future congregation from that time. That's wrong. Revelation 7, 1-8. Show that the numbered ones are the 144,000 Israelites from the Seventh-day Adventist Church, with 12,000 from each of the tribes, therefore fulfilling the word, these witnesses for Elohim are numbered among the spiritual Israel, SDA. What is their work? Today, the church is free to carry forward to completion the divine plan for the salvation of a lost race. Prophets and Kings 7:14. What is the divine plan? While Moses was in the mount, Elohim presented unto him not only the tables of the law, but also the plan of the salvation. Patriarchs and Prophets 3:30. Okay, now it says Deuteronomy 4:14. That the plan of the salvation given unto Moses was recorded by the Moses in the Leviticus 23. Psalms 105 verse 8 to 10 brings the view that the Levitical system was first given to Abraham as a covenant for a period of 1,000 generations, and since there was only 42 generations from Abraham to Yahshua, shows that it was impossible for the Levitical laws to have been nailed to the cross, as there were still remaining 958 generations to be fulfilled. This same covenant was given by oath unto Isaac and confirmed as the same unto Jacob for a law and unto Israel for an everlasting covenant. For the whole system of the types and symbols was a compacted prophecy of the gospel, a presentation in which were bound up the promises of the redemption, Acts the Apostles 14. For the record shows that this covenant was being tampered with, and a false system of the worship was set up to take its place beginning in the 3rd century and onward by the Roman Catholic Church. For the power symbolized by the little horn desolates the sanctuary and halts its regular ritual services. But after a period of 2300 days, the sanctuary is to be cleansed or restored unto its rightful state. The additional information is given that the abomination that maketh desolate is substituted for the daily. Since the daily designates the divinely ordained system of the worship, the power that removes it stands in opposition unto Elohim, and the abomination that maketh desolate represents the counterfeit system of worship. SDA Bible Dictionary, Volume 8, page 242. Well, first you have to restore and establish the divinely ordained system of true worship, and then the power after that removes it would have to come on the scene sometime and oppose it, and oppose Yahweh, and trample it down, and then set up his own version of the ordained system of true worship. And that's exactly what happened at Gilead Center, and that's why Gilead Center came to a close, because of that very thing. The Shepherd Rods couldn't go on forever, because they thought that this ordained system of true worship is going to be set up in the land, and we'd have to wait till we get the land before we start performing our vows. So they couldn't stand. Let's continue. Since Daniel saw in a vision that the little horn would halt and trample the Sabbath and sanctuary truth, the divinely ordained system of worship, Leviticus 23, to the ground, he was concerned about how long before it would be restored. The sanctuary laws put back into force when he heard one saint speaking, and another saint said unto that certain saint which spake, how long shall be the vision concerning the day of sacrifice and the transgression of the desolation, to give both the sanctuary and the host to be trodden under foot? And he said unto me, 2,300 days. Okay. And then shall the sanctuary be cleansed. Daniel 8:13-14. As Daniel 8:14 met fulfillment at the atonement, 10th day of the 7th month, 1844, what part of the divinely ordained sanctuary system was to be restored, reestablished at that time? Let us turn to Daniel 9:24-27. 70 weeks are determined upon thy people and upon thy holy city, and after 62 weeks shall the Messiah be cut off, and he shall confirm the covenant with many for 1 week, and in the midst of the week he shall call the sacrifice and the oblation to cease. Okay, so that what happened in 2002-2003. He called the sacrifice and the oblation to see. As the Yahweh does not contradict himself, we are compelled to seek for a better understanding. Daniel 8:14 tells us that the sanctuary laws were to be restored in 1844. And the Seventh-day Adventist Bible Commentary, Volume 8, page 242, also teaches that it should have been restored then. Daniel 9:27 shows that the sacrificial offerings and services were removed from the sanctuary system at the crucifixion. Therefore, the sanctuary system laws without the sacrifices were to be restored in 1844. But only two of the sanctuary laws, the Sabbath, were restored at that time. Number one, the atonement Sabbath, 10th day of the 7th month, Leviticus 23:27, was restored October 22, 1844. Number two, the seventh day Sabbath was restored in 1845 with the correct time to start the Sabbath sundown given 10 years later. But how about the rest of the sanctuary laws, Sabbath? Elohim's attempt to restore these laws in 1888-90 through the message of Yahshua, our righteousness, by Jones and Wagner, but the message was rejected then. In 1930, Elohim's voice again cried out in the city through the shepherd rod message, hear ye the rod, and who hath appointed? For the antitype of the Moses with the rod, thus the law of the Moses again was given. It too was rejected by the church. These messages came in different fulfillment of the prophetic history and the antitype. Also in 1970, a direct fulfillment of the prophetic history, Elohim brought forth creation calendar, a correct time instrument to restore, reestablish the remaining trodden underfoot sanctuary laws of Sabbath upon the correct astronomical time. For the history which the great I Am has marked in his word, the united link after link in the prophetic chain from eternity in the past to eternity in the future, tells us where we are today in the procession of the ages and what may be expected in the time to come. All that the prophecy has foretold as coming to pass until the present time has been traced on the pages of the history, and we may be assured that all which is yet to come will be fulfilled in its order. Education 178:3. While men have slept, Satan has been stealthily sowing the terrors. Let the watchmen now lift up their voice like a trumpet and give the message which is present truth of this time. Let them know where we are in the prophetic history. Review and Herald, January 1st, 1889. As 1970 was the beginning of the marking of Ezekiel 9, investigative judgment of the living in the house of the Yahweh, the house of King Saul and antipical Esau, 1 Peter 4:17, Gilead sinner. Through this process, all will be prepared for separation or called for in Matthew 13:30. See, Brother Johnson was sounding like that the judgment began for the Adventist Church in 1970. But the judgment began with Gilead sinner. That's where the judgment began. Because the judgment began for the Adventist Church in 2002 when Brother Johnson, representing the Adventist Church, was brought to his end. Let's continue. Let both grow together until the harvest, and in the time of the harvest I will say unto the reapers, gather you together first the tares, the violators of the laws of Moses, and bind them in bundles to burn them, but gather the wheat of those who obey the law of Moses into my barn, kingdom. This counterfeit system, abomination, false feast days, which took the place of the divinely ordained system of the Leviticus 23, has been set up where it ought not, in the church. For the Catholic Church has this to say about it. The new law has its own spirit and its own feast, which have taken the place of those appointed in the law of Moses. If we would know the days to be observed, we must go to the Catholic Church, not to the Mosaic law. From the Catholic Catechism, published in Signs of the Time, November 4, 1919. He, Satan, has deceived them, benumbed their sensibilities, and planted his hellish torch banner right in their midst. And they are completely deceived that they know not it is he. 2T440. Men who stand in the very responsible positions at the heart of the word are asleep. Elohim has paralyzed them. In order that his plans and devices may not be discerned, while he is active to ensnare, deceive, and destroy, 2T439, the record shows that this covenant was trampled to the ground during the Dark Ages, but in 1833, Elohim called William Miller and gave him the following commission, for it was time for this everlasting covenant to start its work of the restoration, by which a righteous nation, the 144,000 Israel, would be developed. And I saw another angel fly in the midst of the heaven, having the everlasting gospel to preach unto them that dwell on the earth, and unto every nation and kindred and tongue and people, saying with a loud voice, Fear Elohim and give glory unto him, for the hour of his judgment is come. And worship him that made the heaven and earth and the sea and the fountains of the waters, Revelation 14:6-7. This message was preached by the Miller for 10 years as a warning of the coming judgment, and on the Day of Atonement, October 22, 1844, the hour of his judgment struck. In 1845, Adventism was born, the father of the 12 tribes, Israel, 144,000, henceforth the governmental system, the covenant, the Levitical laws are being fully established to govern the purified church, the 144,000. Therefore, we have hereby established that the church being held by a nation is the 144,000. Okay, so what was that nation that was holding them? It'd be the Seventh-day Adventist Church. Who is a nation that the church is under subjection to? Well, let's read it. To answer this most vital question, let us first consider the location of the headquarters of the Seventh-day Adventist Church. Since it is Washington, D.C., USA, are we then to say that the United States or England is a nation? Assyria? that is holding Elohim's people in subjection? Let us examine some facts. Because we have a religio-political situation here to deal with, what does it mean by the words Assyria falls? Therefore, thus saith the Yahweh, Elohim of the hosts, O my people that dwellest in Zion, be not afraid of the Assyrian. He shall smite thee with a rod, and shall lift up his staff against thee, after the manner of Egypt. Well, he'd have to be in the church in order to do this. He couldn't be outside the church and not worshiping with you. He'd have to be in the church, so that would be the general conference leaders. That represents this Assyrian yoke that's in your midst. That's the reason why I said when Brother Johnson asked the question here, who is a nation that the church is under subjection to, immediately I answered it by saying the Adventist church. But Brother Johnson is including himself in the Adventist church, and he's saying, well, we're under the Assyrian yoke. So he's going to identify it now. Let's continue. And it shall come to pass in that day that his burden shall be taken away from off thy shoulder, and his yoke from off thy neck, and the yoke shall be destroyed because of the anointing. So what's the yoke? That's the ministers that are appointed over the candlestick of letters here. That's your yoke. And Brother Johnson happened to represent that yoke. In 2002, Isaiah 10:24-27. For example, of this fall of Assyria, we only have to consider the fall of Babylon in 1844. Then shall the Assyrian fall with a sword, not of a mighty man, and the sword not of a mean man, shall devour him. But he shall flee from the sword, and his young men shall be discomfited. Isaiah 31:8. For through the voice of Yahweh shall the Assyrian be beaten down, which smote with a rod. Isaiah 30:31. From the above evidence, we can plainly see that the fall of the Assyria is not brought about by the fall of a nation, but by the voice of the Yahweh, a message. In the summer of 1844, when the fall of Babylon was announced, there was no destruction of a nation. Neither was there war. Nevertheless, it was a spiritual fall, not a political fall, for the work of reform had been carried forward through the Sunday keeping organization, Babylon, a work of the spiritual restoration of restoring truth, which Babylon had trampled to the ground during the Dark Ages. But it was now time to start the work of the reestablishing of the everlasting covenant, Leviticus 23, of which the Day of the Atonement is the first Sabbath restored, and was restored first of October 22nd, 1844, and then re-restored by the Brother W. Johnson in 1970. Now, why did I say re-restored? Because had the Adventists believed that the Day of Atonement would come every year after it was restored in 1844, then their ministers would have been teaching them, well, we're going to have to keep the atonement once a year, or this put back in operation. Let's go on. For the end of the 2300 days prophecy, the second feast that was restored was the seventh-day Sabbath in 1845. Therefore, a Sabbath-keeping body, Israel, was raised up to continue the work of the restoration, for the second angel's message had been given announcing the fall of Babylon, which showed that Elohim was no longer to use her. She suffered a spiritual fall. Likewise, the fall of Assyria is spiritual. If such scenes as this are to come, such tremendous judgments on a guilty world, where will be the refuge for the Elohim's people? How will they be sheltered until the indignation deal will pass? John sees the elements of the nature, earthquake, tempest, and political strife, represented as being held by the four angels. These winds are under control until Elohim gives the word to let them go. There is the safety of Elohim's people. Testimony of Ministers 4:4:4. Since this political strife is held by the four angels until the 144,000 of the church or seal, and perfectly united with him, untouchable, as pointed out in early writings, page 15, they are the stone cut out of the mountain which breaks in pieces the nations, in Daniel 2, and Elohim's battle axe in Jeremiah 51:20. For the fall of Assyria is caused by the Elohim's people casting away their idols and turning fully unto him. There you have it right there. So who represents the Assyrian yoke? It's the prophet that has apostatized and standing in the holy place with a counterfeit system of worship, defying Yahweh and his ordained system of true worship. And that's what exactly represented the Assyrian yoke. It was that false system of worship that was again wrapped around Yahweh's people's neck there at Kermit, Texas. About 2002, when the judgment began for the Adventists, for real, the judgment of the living, then he took that yoke from around the neck of Mount Zion at the 12th hour, the house of David, and delivered the house of David from that Assyrian yoke from the 11th hour Adventists. For through the voice of the Yahweh shall the Assyrian be beaten down, which smote with a rod, Isaiah 30:31. Therefore, as there is no political strife against her, while she, 144,000, are turning unto him, it shows that the fall of this Assyrian is not caused by the war. This Assyrian is the one who is holding Elohim people in captivity in the temple, preventing them from worshiping Elohim according unto his command in Nahum 1:15. So that's exactly what Rollis is doing. Whenever I gave him that message July 14, 2002, said, repent, restore the daily. He said, no, we'll next do the daily when we get in the land. No, I'm not going to do that. I said, well, you're going to have to do this and this and this and this. And he said, no, I don't do any of that. So anyway, this brings us close to our study. This all you can contact that at the 11th hour call. That's number 11, click on our audio archive. To hear this message and more, we will close now with a song. In the garden, I've come to the garden alone, while the dew is still on the roses. I come to the garden alone, while the dew is still on the roses. And the voice I hear falling on my head, the song of Yah discloses. And he walks with me, and he talks with me, and he tells me I am his own. And the joy we share as we carry back, another has ever known. He speaks and the sound of his voice is so sweet the birds have ceased singing. The melody that he gave to me within my heart is ringing. And he walks with me, and he talks with me, and he tells me I am his own. And the joy we share as we carry there, another has ever known. I stay in the garden with him, though the night around me be falling. But he bids me go to the voice of woe. His voice to me is calling. And he walks with me, and he talks with me. with me, and he tells me I am his own, and the joy